go ahead and get started. So we got a little bit more to cover tonight. So we're going to start in Deuteronomy chapter 24. Deuteronomy 24. We'll pick up where we left off last week. And our goal is to get through chapter 26. So we'll see how that goes. I remember, if my memory is correct, that we got through verse 9 and we're ready for verse 10. Does that sound right? Yes? Okay, great. Good, because that's where I started. So, all right, so looking at chapter 24, verse 10, and we're just kind of in this section in Deuteronomy where we're covering a lot of various kinds of laws, and I think it's real easy to just kind of say, I'm kind of through with these laws, but there's a lot to learn, about the lawgiver, and so I think it's really helpful to ask, why did God write these down? Why are these laws important to Him? And I think when we ask that question, very practical applications come out of that. So that's kind of what we're going to be doing tonight. So looking at verses 10 to 13, when you make your neighbor a loan of any sort, you shall not enter his house to take his pledge. You shall remain outside, and the man to whom you make the loan shall bring the pledge out to you. If he is a poor man, you shall not sleep with his pledge. When the sun goes down, you shall surely return the pledge to him, that he may sleep in his cloak and bless you. And it will be righteousness for you before the Lord your God. All right, so I think it's helpful for me to understand this idea of a loan and pledge and security, and kind of figuring out, once we figure that out, it'll be a little bit easier to understand. So when you give someone a loan, they would give you a pledge to show that they're going to pay the loan. So as long as you kind of owed you money, you had something of theirs. And so until you paid that off, then you would return what was given as a pledge. So there's an example of this in Genesis 38. Remember the story of Judah and Tamar, that horrific story, right? Where Judah had three sons, Onan, and Shelah. Has a wife, and Tamar, and then he is evil in the sight of the Lord, so God kills So then Onan, the second son of Judah, gets her and to have a child for her. Well, he does evil in the sight of the Lord, so God kills him. So Judah is now left with one son, and he's not old enough to have Tamar, so he just says to Tamar, when he's old enough, then I'll give you him. Well, a lot of time passes by, and she never receives Shelah. Judah goes out and thinks he's with a harlot, and it ends up being Tamar. And Tamar says, well, what are you going to pay me to do this? And he says, well, I'm going to give you a young goat. And so Tamar says, I want some security so that I know you're going to give me that goat. And he said, well, what do I have that I can give you as a pledge? So he says, well, you have your signal, or your kind of a like a ring, and a seal, a cord, and your staff. And so she uses those three things kind of as a pledge to make sure she gets the goat. That's kind of the idea, and then I won't tell the rest of that story. But so that's the idea of kind of the loan, pledge, and security. Any questions? Did I confuse everyone greatly and all that? Okay, that wasn't my goal to confuse. So, yes, sir.
Lesson, they couldn't charge interest.
Correct.
So it was just, when we think of a loan, ordinarily we think, okay, we're going to have to pay back something extra.
Yes.
But that's not the case.
That's right. So it would indicate that someone who needed this loan, as Jacob suggested last week, this would be for survival, not for, we kind of tell the story of my father-in-law and mother-in-law. They took out a loan to get a microwave way back in the day. We kind of bring that up every once in a while. But not for a month. This would be more significant. Needing of a loan than just a microwave. So God says in these verses, you're not allowed to take the pledge from someone's house. So you can't just go in and just take their cloak, for example, and say, okay, I'm going to give this back to you when you're done paying me back. They have to give it to you. And then secondly, dealing with a poor person, you shall not keep his cloak, because he's going to need that when it comes nighttime. So again, we're going to see this a lot in these chapters that we're covering tonight, is make sure that you are not taking advantage of the poor, those who are weak among you. And so that's kind of the idea you see here. Yes, sir?
Could it be that, you know, I'm going to go ahead and look around and see if there's something there? You know, and
yes.
There's probably a reason why he tells him not to go in the house. And I think the kind of obvious thing is, hey, there might be something there I want more than
sure.
This thing.
Yeah, you can't take advantage of this person. And so again, God restricting the rules to protect the poor in this case. Thoughts or comments through verse 13?
Seems like showing your brother respect is also part of that.
Yes, good point.
Even though you have the advantage because you're giving them a loan, you still need to treat them with respect.
Yes, excellent point. All right. Well, look at verses 14 and 15. Again, kind of the idea of the poor. You'll see that word quite a bit. You shall not oppress a hired servant who is poor and needy, whether he is one of your countrymen or one of your aliens who is in your land and your towns. You shall give him his wages on his day before the sun sets, for he is poor and sets his heart on it, so that he will not cry against you to the Lord, and it becomes sin in you. All right, so he starts out, this is a rule for your countrymen and for the foreigner who may be living in your town. And if he works for you, and it was kind of a sun up to sun down work, and before that sun set, you were obligated to give him his wages for the day. Now, it would have been really easy for you to take advantage of him. And he could do nothing against you. He didn't have any advantage over you, but you are to pay him because that's what was due. So God attaches a punishment notice on this one, that if you do not pay, if you're not fair or just with this man, then what may happen? He cries out to God, who can do something against you, right? So here's the one that's kind of powerless, crying out to the one who has all the power, and you will be sinning in this case. So again, just another, make sure you're fair and honest with your hired men who are poor and can't really fend for themselves, because they're depending on your honesty to come through. Yes. Absolutely. Good. Yes. And maybe that's kind of the idea there. He's has his heart, sets his heart on it. That's where he's going to get his meal after working all day. Sure. All right. Any other thoughts through verse 15?
No, it reminds me, give us this day our daily bread.
Yeah.
In that we don't live in a country where we survive day to day. But there's so many places that they're on, where
yes.
There's famine, war, things where people are
sure.
Desperate. And to think that somebody would say, well, I'll pay you tomorrow when their children are hungry. Well, that
yeah.
Just,
good
God
point.
Shows his care for his children in this world.
Yes, especially the poor. among them that we're seeing in this context. Okay, look at verse 16, kind of the idea of no substitutes for the death sentence. A father is not allowed to die for his son, and the son is not allowed to take the punishment of death for his father. So the idea is we are all responsible for our own actions, and we can't blame our actions on other people. When we mess up, or when a child messes up, you've seen this or heard this, that when a child messes up, some people blame the parents, right? Oh, that you just must have just really bad parents, right? Well, no, not necessarily. Now, the parents will pay for whatever they've done wrong, but who did the action? It was the son, right? It was the child, so they are responsible for their own actions. So this is very, very applicable. And you think about the idea of Jesus taking our place. And I think this just puts a lot more, it did for me, a lot more emphasis on what Jesus did for us. We did the actions, we were responsible, and yet Jesus' love, he took the place for us on the cross. That's amazing. He paid our debt, even though we are the guilty ones. All right. Anything thoughts or comments on verse 16? We're kind of hitting these one.
How unusual this law is that children are protected in that time, and even really now.
Yeah.
That people would steal children. Put them into slavery, and they still do in some countries
sure.
today.
Yeah.
And yet God says the child is to be protected.
Yes.
And I think it's just
yeah.
really, and we say, what kind, who has a God like this?
Yeah, right, good. That would certainly stand out in this whole book, is that this is a God unlike any other God, especially in Canaan. In that sinful end. All right? Looking at verse 17 and 18, you shall not pervert of justice, do an alien or an orphan, nor take a widow's garment in pledge. But you shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt, and that the Lord your God redeemed you from there. Therefore, I'm commanding you to do this thing. Okay, so the idea of people who need justice the most, it's kind of the weakest among them, right? Which would be, we're going to see these three paired together quite frequently. You probably noticed that. Is the alien, the orphan, and the widow. Those who are kind of the most powerless. You make sure, he was very clear, make sure that justice is served for those. And what does he bring up to kind of help them make sure they do this? Remember, you were slaves in Egypt. This is a principle. I looked it up. It's in chapter 5, verse 15, chapter 15, verse 15, chapter 16, verse 12, and then two times here in chapter 24. So it's a principle that he keeps bringing up. Remember, you were a slave in Egypt. So don't think of yourself more highly because your circumstances have changed. And remember how God was gracious to you when you needed it the most. And doesn't that help for us to remember that and to think, you know what, I was down and out. Look what God has done for me. Look how much mercy and grace God has bestowed to me. Therefore, how can I not but do the same for you? So keep remembering you were slaves in Egypt. That's just kind of a powerful, powerful principle he keeps bringing up. Okay, anything through verse 18? All right, so wrapping up, kind of 19 to 22, I all kind of shoved those together. And basically the idea of leave food for, you guessed it, alien, orphan, and widow, right? Make sure that the poor among you have something to eat. And this is a great kind of way to handle. They're not just handing them food. They still have to go work for it, right? They have to go to the field. So that's pretty good philosophy. But if you leave a sheaf behind when you are harvesting, you're not allowed to go back and get it. And that probably would have been a temptation to do. Does anyone come to mind when you kind of read these verses here, especially about the sheaves and the wheat? Yes, Ruth and Boaz, right? Boaz kind of went above and beyond this command, and he told his work, you leave stuff behind on purpose. This seems to be kind of an accident. I forgot it. Well, that's on you. But Boaz, extremely helpful to Ruth and Naomi. And when you beat an olive tree, I think it's the idea of you're just beating that tree, trying to get all these olives to come down. And you're able to pick those up, but you can't keep beating the tree. So there's going to be some olives that are more ripe than others that are going to fall easier. Well, you leave those other ones to get more ripe, and then those will be food for the alien orphan widow. And he ends up talking about the grapes. When you gather grapes, again, there's going to be some you want, some you don't, but you're not allowed to go back and get a second, third round of your grapes. And again, notice how he ends it. Remember, you were a slave in Egypt. Remember, you needed help. You needed people to help you when you were down and out. Be the same kind of person. Remember the past and let that be a good teacher for you. Yes. Good point. Good. Yeah. And how much do we need to do the same thing? Yeah. Plan to help. Good. All right. Anything else through?
People did have to actually go get the stuff.
Yes.
and do a little bit to.
Absolutely.
They had to do a little bit.
Yes. Yes. Which is, I think it's great. great way to handle things. Okay. Verse chapter 25, verses 1 through 3, and this is amazing, because in these verses, who is God favoring, or who is God protecting here? The guilty party, the one who was wicked, and yet God is saying, you have to be just, even to the one who was wicked. So that's, you know, talk about different. That would be pretty different. So two men have a dispute. They go to court to let the judge settle the dispute, and the judge favors with the righteous, as he should. And so he says the law is the wicked man must lie down and be beaten in the presence of the judge, but he's not allowed to beat him more than 40 times. So that 40 lashes, and I think the Romans 40 minus 1, right? Like if you went over, then it was kind of on you that you'd get the, so you're not allowed to just go off on him. And the idea is the brother should not be degraded in your eyes. I think the ESV, the purpose is to punish him for what he did against the other man. The purpose was not to degrade him or humiliate him. He has to learn his lesson. And this law does not say you have to beat him 40 times, right? That's the max. If he deserves 10, he gets 10. If he deserved that, that'd be up to the judge. So this is not saying you get 40 lashes for whatever you do. So that'd be, I think, an important point. Yes, sir?
Why would it have to be in front of the judge? I think a lot of times judges have a tendency to seek vengeance, but yet if they had to watch the punishment,
yes,
maybe they would be a little less likely, be a little more thoughtful and merciful.
Yes.
I don't see that guy hit 40 times.
Yeah. That was my thought on kind of specifically the judge has to be in the presence of that. And so when you say he deserves 20 lashes, you have to maybe count them, watch them, hear the groaning and everything. So that'd be impactful.
Also,
Okay, good point. Yeah, especially as a judge. Yeah, great point.
When Jesus was given the lashes by the Romans,
right?
Did the people that imposed that watch it? I don't think so.
It seems to me, in my reading, that they just went beyond, and they just kind of enjoyed watching him suffer. Because there's a guy that claims to be the king. Well, we'll show him who's king. You know, we'll show him he's not a king. And it, just kind of how I read it, they didn't didn't follow this.
You couldn't hire Romans to come and do your whippings for you.
Right.
I think, but yeah, that's exactly.
Yeah. Good. All right. Look at verse 4. Maybe a familiar one to us because of some New Testament passages. But you shall not muzzle an ox while he is threshing. Why not? What's the idea?
He's got to do the work, he's got to get some reward.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, good. So if you put a muzzle on an ox, he has to be able to eat. So again, show kindness to the animals. We've seen that, you know, several times. So the idea of why someone would do this is they don't want the ox to eat all of their wheat, right? And so kind of saving money is showing you're greedy. But Paul points out in 1 Corinthians chapters 8 and 9, he brings this proverb, what he calls it, up, this law of Moses. And he says there in those chapters, he's making the point that if you have the right to do something, that doesn't mean you always have to exercise that right. And so in Corinth, he was doing a lot of work, right, as a tent maker, and he was kind of paying his own way. And the his opponents in Corinth said, well, Paul's just not worth being paid in the first place. Well, Paul says, look, I had every right to be paid. I was working for you spiritually. Do you think you could have repaid me physically? So he makes that point and he brings up this passage. So that gives us kind of the idea of the worker is owed what he puts in, his labor. Yes?
I was going to say, I'm struck by a God who would make these laws that balance justice and mercy.
Yes.
A lot about the God of the Old Testament being a vengeful, wrathful God.
Yes.
When you read these laws, you see this balance.
Yes.
Between upholding what is right and protecting people who are in the right, but also having great mercy for those who are in the wrong.
That's a great point. Great point. Any other thoughts? Yes, sir.
I think what that boils down to, they need to feed their animals ahead of time too, didn't they?
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah, good. All right, the next set of verses there is verses 5 through 10, which is kind of an interesting little section, right? So this is kind of carrying on your brother's lineage. So here's the scenario. When brothers live together and one of them dies and he does not have a son, so now you have a sister-in-law who just became a widow, right? It says that she is not allowed to marry outside the family, that she is expected to marry, or one of the brothers is to marry his sister-in-law and have a son by her, and the son will gain the inheritance of the brother who died. He would kind of carry on his dad's lineage, but think about the sacrifices that this brother is taking on if he chooses to go through with this. What are some things he would be sacrificing?
It wouldn't help the family.
Yeah, kind of a weird family dynamic. Yeah, for sure. Good. So His firstborn is really not even his. And then, who is he having to support? His sister-in-law, now wife, you know, whatever we want to call that. And at the most, or excuse me, at the least, one child, right? What if they have a girl and two girls? There you go. So they'd have to, I guess, keep trying to have a son until that son is born, then she can kind of carry on. What would happen to the inheritance of his brother if he didn't do anything? Well, it would probably go to the family. And so he would kind of be gaining maybe some inheritance. So the idea of sacrifice is really heavy in this section. And it shows the importance of inheritance, right? It shows the importance of having a son. But here we have a scenario where he's willing to do it. Now, well, what if he's not willing to do it? What is to happen? So the sister-in-law goes before the elders of the gate, and he says, this no good brother-in-law, right, is unwilling to do this. And so the elders call for the brother and say, well, this is the report that's been given about you. Is that true? And it seems the idea, if he persists. So I take from that, maybe they are trying to encourage him to change his mind. But if he persists that this is, I've made up my mind, then it's interesting, right? Sister-in-law comes and takes off one of his sandals, spits in his face, and then proclaims or declares, thus it is done to the man who does not build up his brother's house. And then his name becomes a lot longer than Joe. It becomes the house of him whose sandal is removed. That's who we, what we're calling him from here on out. So this comes into play. I think this is kind of the only section in the law that kind of deals with this scenario. But I think this comes into play in Ruth and Boaz. Remember that scenario where they're trying to find the nearest kinsman? So this might have a reference to that story and what happens there. All right. I hope you don't have any questions. And I told you all I know with that. All right. So here we have another fun section, verses 11 and 12. And see how you can see how it connects with the previous 5 to 10. So we have two men struggling together, and then you can read it. One of the wives kind of comes to the rescue. And the punishment for what she did was her hand is cut off, and you are to show no pity in doing that. So the question I have for you, as you read that and think about that, is how does this connect with verses 5 through 10? What's the idea of what she was doing? What is she trying to stop from happening?
Bearing children,
right. So kind of the same idea here. She kind of stopped him from having that ability. And so that did a lot of harm. And so you are to show no pity towards her in what she did. Again, that's all I know in that section. So verses 13 to 16. So verses 13 and 14 kind of display what you are not allowed to do. Verse 15, what you are supposed to do. And then verse 16 is the why. So if verse 13 and 14, you are not allowed to have differing weights or differing containers. And you're supposed to have a full and just weight. Notice that word just. Weight or a just container. So the reason why and how this all makes sense is verse 16. You are to act justly towards one another. So what is the idea? Why?
Cheating.
No cheating. So how would they cheat in kind of 13, 14?
Not giving a due amount.
Yes, absolutely. So if you go to Kroger or Publix and they'd say, well, I want this ham or meat and they put it on a scale. Now, if they were to temper with the scale and say, you got, well, it shows a pound of meat, but they, it's really kind of in their favor where it'd be maybe 3/4 of a pound. And so they'd be making money, right? Because you're paying for a full pound, but that's not what you're getting. Does that make sense?
Well, that's kind of like even in our laws today. People go around checking scales and things to make sure they're
Yes. Because this is still relevant, still happens today. Proverbs 16 and in verse 11 says, a just balance and scales belong to the Lord. All the weights of the bag are His concern. Isn't that interesting? Who is concerned about this daily activity of weighing? It's His concern, God's concern. God knows if you are being honest or just with your weight. So be sure you do. Yes, sir.
On the Supreme Court is Lady Justice, and she's blindfolded, and she has a scales. And that is symbolic of the way our justice system is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be favored one or the other, because really, if you look at our founding document, it is because under the eyes of God, we are all equal. There should be justice, and the basis of it is there's God.
Yeah.
It's not any other basis other than this is what God expected.
Yes, and I fear God. The idea of fearing God is very, very powerful. Okay, so look at verses 17 to 19. And what is God reminding them of? What they must do. Say it again.
Took advantage of the weak.
Okay, who did? Okay, so blot out Amalek. Because what they did, and we kind of learn a little bit more about what they did here than we learned in Exodus, where is that? Exodus 17, kind of 8 through 15. Remember that story where Moses has his staff and he raises it up, and as long as the staff is raised up, then Joshua and Israel are winning. And so he got Aaron and Hur helping Moses hold that staff up. That was right after they came out of Egypt, and they went a while without water, and they were about to stone Moses to death. And then God told Moses, hit the rock, and I'll provide water from the rock. And so you just have the idea of they are tired, they're weary, and they attack the weak, as Brother Wayne pointed out. So because they did that, they did not fear me. We're going to wipe them out. Any Old Testament stories come to mind in trying to wipe out or utterly destroy Amalek? King Saul. King Saul in 1 Samuel 15. 1 through 3, God was very clear. I want you to utterly destroy them. What did Saul do? He kept the best, right? And who was the king? Do you remember the king of Amalek? That's a tough question. King Agag, okay? Now, that is important because who was a Agagite? You remember? Later on, Haman, good. So Haman was an Agagite coming from, we think, Amalek. And so that story again, this prophecy is fulfilled when Haman and his family are destroyed. So God is just getting rid of the Amalekites. And they kind of be kind of this tribe where they would live in different places, kind of nomadic. And so he just had to get one tribe at a time, and God wiped them out because of what they did. Okay, so chapter 26, we'll try to cover in about 9 minutes. But before we get there, we're doing okay on time. Any thoughts or comments with that idea? Okay. I'll skip that. Okay, chapter 26, kind of serves as the end of a big section here in Deuteronomy. Chapters 12 through 26 all kind of go together and kind of being more specific in the laws. Remember chapters 6 through 11, we'll review this, Lord willing, next week. 6 through 11 was more general laws. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. This is how you are to do that. And then it gets more specific starting in chapter 12. Interesting, if you look back at chapter 12, there's a lot of kind of bookends that we see in chapter 26 that we began in chapter 12. So this, it kind of shows this section is kind of one big section. So this kind of the end of the section where we talk about a couple of things, and then we'll kind of have this summary section starting in verse 16. But the first thing is the idea of the law of the first fruits in verses 1 through 11. So God gives them a process of what they are to do whenever they receive the first fruits of the harvest. So the idea is it's not every single first fruit God gets. So how many first fruits does God get? And verse 2. Okay, how many first fruits were they to bring or dedicate to God, looking at verse 2? Some of the first fruits, and then what were they all to do with those some? Put them in a basket. So you kind of get a basket and kind of fill this basket up with some of your first fruits, right? And then you are to take this basket to the priest who happens to be in serving as a priest during that time. And then what is to happen next, which is kind of unique? What are they to do next? So I'm looking at the idea of the priest kind of puts it by the altar, and they are to make a declaration. And so they're kind of to have this this speech, if you will, kind of memorized. And this would be really helpful to them. And so that's kind of what we're thinking about. How would this be helpful to the one kind of bringing the first fruits to God? So it was to declare this day to the Lord my God that I have entered the land which the Lord swore to our fathers to give us. So giving God the glory for what he's done for them. This day belongs to the Lord. And they are to be reminded of how God keeps his promises, right? Just as God said we would have this land, he fulfilled his promise. So that's helpful, right, in the idea of I'm declaring this is the Lord because of what he's done for me and how he fulfilled this promise, which has benefited me, right? I get to live in a land flowing with milk and honey. So then the priest puts it before the altar of the Lord, and then he kind of makes a second speech, if you will, if you want to call the first one a speech, in verses 5 through the first part of verse 10. And notice he does a few things. He retells the history of how they came to the land. They were few in number, but then what did God do? He made us great, right? Made us into this great nation. Then he talks about how they were mistreated in Egypt. And then how God heard their cry when they were oppressed. God heard us, and not only heard us, but answered our cries. He brought us out of Egypt with a mighty and outstretched hand and performed great wonders among us. And he brought us to a land flowing with milk and honey. And that brings it to today, where because of what God has done, now I get to bring this little something, this little basket full of first fruits, I'm going to give that to the Lord. How is that speech helpful? For the worship.
It's a reminder. It's like they were always supposed to teach their children what God did for them.
Good point.
If you're giving this to God and dedicating it, it's a reminder for them.
Great point. So it's a good reminder to the family. It's a good reminder for yourself, right? It really emphasizes the need to be grateful at what God has done for you. And what story, if you were kind of to put a title to this story that they're retelling, what story are they telling? Yeah, the idea of Exodus, their salvation story, right? And this is the story we need to be telling, right? Our salvation story. Look what God has done for us. And we're reminded of that every Sunday when we partake the Lord's Supper. And so a very powerful story, and a great, great way for God to help them be grateful for what he has done. So then next, they are to worship God, and then they are just to rejoice, right? And so that's the attitude that God wants. When you're bringing something to God, it could have the attitude of, man, these first fruits, I've been looking forward to this for months and months. It finally came, and now I have to give God some. No, the story is, God has blessed me so much, I get to give God based on what he has done for me. That's the attitude he's looking for in us when we give, right? They were to know their history and their past very well. And it just really emphasizes how God was with them and how God blessed them.
That dropped the basket.
Yeah.
And there's probably a point there because, you know, if their children are listening to speech, well, tell me the story about that.
Sure.
It's probably another prompt to get them to tell the whole story.
Yeah.
About Jacob and Israel.
Yes, good. Okay, the year of the tithe, verses 12 to 15. We hit this before briefly. In chapter 14, verse 28 and 29, kind of gives us kind of the every third year you are to tithe. So we're given a fuller explanation here, and it fits well here because there's another speech that is associated with this one. So this was to be kind of in your own towns, and you were to supply food for who? What three groups that we've hit before? The weak, right? The alien, the orphan, and the widow, and the Levite. Why the Levite? Well, go back to 14:28, because he doesn't get an inheritance, right? So you are to help him and benefit him as well. So the speech there in verse 14, these are the things I have not done. So you're kind of claiming your innocence. It's one thing to just do something, but when you kind of vocalize, this is what I've done, it kind of puts more pressure on you to be honest in what you say. So that's very powerful. And he says, look down, Lord, and bless your people and bless the land. And so when they do what's right, God will bless and provide for them. So I don't know, I probably have like 10 seconds left. But the summary, kind of starting there in verse 16, this is kind of summing up what we started back in chapter 12, you need to be careful. How many times did we see that, right? Be careful to do all, to love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. And then they make a declaration to God. And the fun thing is that God makes a declaration to them as well. And a lot of similarities between them and us, how we are a treasured possession. That we should keep his commandments, and he will set us high above the nations that he made. And you shall be a consecrated people to the Lord. So really, really cool way to end that. So Lord willing, next week we'll look at kind of the curses and the blessings that are found in chapters 27 and 28. All right, kind of got through it, did pretty good. Any final thoughts or comments? All right. Very good. Thank you.